Welcome back to another episode of the Whitetail Theories Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy McKinney, and tonight I got some server-side OGs. We got Elliot Sheriff in the house and Colby Straw, my buddies from Pennsylvania. What's up, guys?
How you doing?
What's going on? Thanks for having me.
So, guys, what are we talking about tonight?
We'll talk about bucks.
Very good. Bucks. You're at the right place. We've literally been on so many hunting trips together.
We have. Some good
ones. In some capacity. So, what do you guys want to focus on?
What do you think, Elliot? Maybe you're a public lander?
Yeah, we could do that. Public land Missouri hunts.
Missouri?
Yeah, we could do that. Get into a little bit of PA hunting, but...
Okay.
Wherever we take it, that's where it goes, huh?
I like the sound of some public land in Missouri, because as you guys always say, there's...
None.
There's none.
There is none.
Not much. You have better luck in Ohio, I think.
Yeah.
Some will say.
Some will tell. So, okay. So, we're not going to disclose the location. It's pretty safe to say.
Not a chance.
No. All right. Somewhere in the state of Missouri.
But you did kill your biggest buck, Elliot, in Missouri, correct?
I did.
On public land.
That's correct.
All right. I think that's a good starting point. Well, all right. Let's back up. Let's retract a little bit. So, how many years have you been hunting Missouri now?
So, I've hunted Missouri 3 years now.
And how many years have you been doing the public out there?
My first two. The third year I did a little bit, well, which was this past year, I did a little bit of public land in late season, but I did get on a lease, which was, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Didn't have to battle with the pressure on public land near as much. That was definitely one of the bigger struggles of the public land hunting there, was all the pressure and all the guys you'd run into. And
So you'd say the secret is out as far as that there is public land in Missouri?
There's no doubt about it. There's public land there. Growing up, I've always hunted Pennsylvania public land, and there's a lot of land in Pennsylvania.
We call it the big woods.
The big woods, yeah. Compared to Missouri, there's a lot of smaller areas. You know, some of the areas I was in that I checked out was like 20 to 40 acres. You know, there's a bunch of those little areas. There's some bigger ones, but...
And you killed your biggest buck to date on...
It was about, what?
10 acres of timber.
10, 15 acres of timber, yeah.
That's
biggest
awesome.
Biggest buck I ever killed in my life.
So what I want to do is dive into some tactics and strategies and what might have worked for you, what might work for others that are listening, and some take home. So... I guess starting at the top, what style of hunting do you like to do? Are you a stalk kind of guy? Are you a ground blind guy? Are you a climber guy? Or a little bit of everything kind of guy?
I'd say a little bit of everything. You know, whatever works for you.
You saddle guy? You're not a saddle guy.
No, I'm not a saddle guy. I use the climber a lot. Or I'll take a hang on with sticks, you know, stuff like that.
Find the sign, hunt the sign.
Exactly. Especially going in blind to an area, you know, you're going to... Just walk it, you know, creep through the area and see what you can see. And if you see something you like, you know, spend some more time there.
So you guys didn't go out in the summer and did you do trail cameras or any of that stuff?
No.
Not for public, no.
Not on the public land, nope.
Okay.
It's basically like you can kind of take your rut tactics that you would hunt anywhere and use the same tactics on public. I mean, it's not, don't be afraid to get aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay, so now I have my own style of like sneaking in, doing my own thing. So like, tell us a little bit about how you read the terrain and what you use to get that advantage, to get yourself set up for potentially killing something.
Deeper.
I'd say deeper. If you can go deeper, go deeper. If you pull into a parking lot and you see a bunch of vehicles there, you're going to have to try to avoid people. That's a big thing.
I think a lot of people get mixed up with the fact that just because it's public land doesn't mean that there's not big bucks living there.
Okay.
And big bucks passing through the area, especially in the rut when Elliot primarily hunts Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there is, sometimes you don't have to go deeper,
right near the parking lot, I mean, we've seen bucks.
A 10-acre patch of woods is where I killed the biggest buck I've ever killed, and, you know, that area probably got overlooked, so you can very easily overlook areas. Just about, like, I guess timing is a big thing. You know, the more time you spend in the woods, the better your chances are. So, you spend a lot of time. You know, we use Onyx a lot. That's a huge tool that we use, and we spend a lot of time finding different areas. And you know, throughout the year, you know, we hunt 2 weeks out of the year in Missouri. So we have another 50 weeks to spend,
scouting, basically.
Just pretty much just scouting on your phone. And when it comes time to hunt, you go hard.
Okay. So you're looking at Onyx, doing some e-scouting, and then just kind of using your own intuition to decide where you're going to hunt when it comes down to that two-week period?
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Take your five main areas and hunt the wind.
Okay, so that's one of the strategies there?
No, absolutely. That's definitely, yeah.
Because you're already dealing with the ground scent of so many other people.
Mm-hmm.
You want to position yourself in the best possible spot to see a mature deer, whether he be cruising through or living there.
Okay, so you're taking into effect, and I, you know, like when we do these podcasts, I find that some guys, they subconsciously do things that they don't necessarily realize is a big part of their strategy.
Yeah.
So you just said you're using the advantage of knowing there's ground scent from other hunters in that area.
Like, you know how, you basically know, looking at the parking lot, you can see one main trail in, one main trail out, where everyone's taking.
Right.
Get away from it. I mean, funnels, pinch points, you know, thermal areas where deer are going to want to travel. Like Elliot hunted a creek bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, creek bottoms are huge in Missouri.
No, hold on. I think I do remember a creek bottom story. Some article of something got disappeared.
I might have lost a cell phone into a creek. might have lost a climber into a creek.
Okay,
might have went swimming a couple times.
So you crossed a creek that most guys wouldn't have crossed.
That's anyone with a sane mind would probably not cross that creek. And
so what happened?
Well,
it's a long day.
So we spent a lot of time scouting this area, and I wanted to hunt it, and we had 3 solid days of rain, and with the flat land out there, any little bit of rain, all those creek bottoms, they fill up. It's like a river. So
that's where we saw those 3 bucks that were pushing 150 when we were scouting.
Yeah, that was the first year I went out to hunt Missouri. We did a scouting mission we were out there for like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
And
preseason?
Preseason. I think it was like beginning of September, something like
that. Okay, so are they hard-horned at this point?
In between, probably a mixture of both. I mean,
yeah.
They're starting to harden.
Okay.
We did, and we saw a lot of good bucks that weekend. In that area. So, you know, I wanted to pursue that really hard. And when it came time for it, all that rain really changed my game plan up. And then I just said, whatever, I'm swimming.
So, it was a help and a hindrance at the same time.
It was.
Keep other guys
it
out.
Was. Yeah, it definitely helped keep other guys out. Because then later on in the season,
creek's a little bit dry.
It was pretty much dried up. And there was, you know, 5 or 6 vehicles in the parking lot with one way into this area, and we called it the Michigan Trail. There was all the vehicles
trucks.
Were Michigan license plates. You know, I talked to all those guys. They were all really cool. We all shared some knowledge with each other, and you know, that was part of the experience. That's what makes hunting. It was pretty cool. But there was a pretty defined trail going into this section of woods.
You find that area.
I've hunted
multiple years now.
3 years, yeah.
And seen good bucks every time.
I've killed 2 bucks in there, and Derek killed 1.
Okay.
Yeah, when Derek came
you
out the first year.
Saw a couple of big bucks, too.
Yeah, yeah. There was a
that got killed in there, too.
No, I know quite a few big ones that got killed in there, yeah.
So despite knowing that there were other hunters in that area, you felt like it's okay to come back and hunt it?
Yeah, from the deer sign that we saw in there, I think it was, especially in the rut. You know, rut hunting is what it is. You know, those deer could be anywhere.
And that comes with hunting public too.
And there was, and you know, we all knew we were all hunting in there. You know, myself and the other guys that I ran into, and there was a few times in the morning. You know, we were there 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and all rolling in, and you know, we were kind of all like. We all have the same goal in mind. So we would talk, and we'd all bring up our Onyx maps and be like, I'm going here. This other guy was going over here. We'd all kind of stay away from each other and, you know.
Okay. Well, that's
we're all
cool.
There to kill.
As much as an etiquette there is, I mean, public land hunting is also cutthroat.
Right.
100% it is.
Cutthroat.
That's a good word for it.
It is. You mean, you're the first one there, you're the first one in. It's
right.
Basically first come, first serve.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think that's the reason too. You get a lot of guys are tight-lipped about where they hunt, you know, and I'm all for giving strategies, but I'll be darned if I'm going to give guys, you know, this is my family or friends. Correct. Yeah, I'm not going to give that up, you know.
Because that's, you did the work. It's your work.
Right.
You want to reap the benefits.
So did you find that these guys that you ran into hunting the public, that they were like-minded in their strategy, or you're like, dude, this guy's just not really sure what he's doing?
No, they were all very like-minded, you know. We all had the same goal in mind. We wanted to shoot something that we were going to hang on the wall.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to be messing each other up, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's the etiquette thing. We're not going to...
And the way that public laid out, though, was kind of like a long strip that ran on an angle to the north, ran to the north, right?
Yeah. Yeah, from the parking lot, it went north.
So your north and south winds... based what you hunted and how you hunted it, you know?
Yeah.
So how important would you guys, and I already know my answer, but I just want to know how important the wind is to your strategy and how you hunt the wind and scent control.
Oh, extremely. Yeah, that's a huge part of it.
In this industry nowadays, they pitch all these gimmicks as far as scent control, scent blocker. I mean, I'm not throwing out any names, but like,
but they're gimmicks.
It's not real, man.
Right.
It's not. You'll never mask the human scent.
Right.
It's impossible.
Yeah, you can try as hard as you want. It's
your snot. Everything smells.
Behind your ears. Yeah.
We have glands all over our body.
Right.
There's no way to mask it. So the only thing you can possibly do is hunt the wind. Hunt his wind that he wants and hunt the wind that you want.
Okay.
That's the only way. And if they mesh, that's when you kill one.
So can you give some insight on what a deer's wind is and getting into the mindset of what the deer's actually doing?
I think a buck, mainly that time of the year, which we go out the beginning of November and hunt the first 2 weeks of November, which is, I mean, everyone knows, this is game time, it's primo. I think bucks are focusing on downwind sides of bedding areas. I don't think he's focused on worrying where he beds much, because he's going to be bedding wherever a doe beds when he finds one. So when he finds a bedding area, he's going to be circling downwind of it constantly. Anytime he can get downwind of a bedding area, he's going to be scent checking for does if he doesn't already have one. And he'll always travel on the downwind side of his doe. So
yeah.
I think that's most important is get on the downwind side of those bedding areas. A lot of ridges out in Missouri, you know, like these bucks like to travel the tips of these ridges.
What's a tip, like the peak? What do you mean by tip?
So you have like a creek bottom.
Okay.
And then these ridges and these ravines feed into these creek bottoms.
Okay.
And they like to travel the tips and jump the tips. If the winds, say you have a west wind, and your creek bottom runs north and south, he's going to be traveling the east side of that west bedding area.
So like along the creek, but over the terrain though.
Exactly. I've killed multiple bucks on my lease doing that. I actually killed one buck with a bow on public doing the same exact thing.
Okay.
Just... on those humps.
Yep.
For some reason, even over where you killed yours, there was the same exact terrain. You hunted mainly flat river bottom, but they had those
humps.
There
was a little bit of terrain, yeah.
Do you think they like having a little bit more of escape routes, like when they're doing that, or cover?
Close. Or? Yeah, they like to be close.
Yeah.
But like I said, they're going to be traveling on the downwind sides of bangers, so they got to do is go on.
Sure. Yeah, so and I like that you brought this point up. So like... recently in the hunting industry, it seems like everybody's so infatuated with buck beds and buck bedding. And it's like, how do you just walk into a buck's bedroom or just think that a buck's just going to blindly walk into his bed and you're going to be sitting there and he's going to have no idea?
I think buck bedding goes out the door when it comes to the rut.
Right.
100%. Doesn't matter.
It's a totally different strategy. And that's exactly what you guys are focused on during that 2 week. That's when you're taking vacation from work, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what, I mean, you got to do the most... aggressive tactics to make it successful because you only have 2 weeks.
Right.
Why would a buck go and bed by himself when he can bed with his doe and protect her? He's going to be bedding where does bed.
For sure. Yeah, I agree completely. And like these are all the, you know, it's hard to teach a new hunter how to be successful, especially in public. Like there's so many pieces of the equation, and then you add in there other hunters and all those different aspects.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Like,
and sometimes it's as simple as that. You know, you're dealing with other hunters. You just got to go pick a spot and go hang out. And
Right.
That's kind of like
in the right place, right time.
Yeah, be in the right place, the right time. If you're successful, then you can kind of like look back on it and see why that worked for you. Yeah. You know, see, you know, keep track of where your wind was at, where the bedding was at, where the food's at. You know, if you have any terrain or anything, work it backwards almost. If you have a successful hunt, or if, even if you don't have a successful hunt as far as killing, if you see deer moving, you know, how they're moving, how they're reacting to certain things.
I think that's a big thing, what you just said, is like, just because you didn't kill something doesn't mean your hunt wasn't successful.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of guys lose spectrum of what really, what why we're out here.
Right.
I think because you want to kill something.
Any time that you're in the woods, even, you know, if you don't kill something, you're still learning.
Well, how many of your friends come out to Missouri?
We got
a few of us now.
Me, you, Anthony, Derek on occasion, Adam.
Adam's dad and his uncle.
Tom, we're all friends with Tom.
Yeah. Which is so cool. And it worked
Jimmy,
out
that, you come out now.
Well, it worked out that I got a lease. And
Stephen and Dave are out this year.
Yeah. So, and that was dumb luck.
I feel like there might have been another group.
Within an hour or two of all you guys out there.
Yeah, we were all within.
Ben and Bob came out.
They came out.
They came and hunt public land.
So that's like, to me, that's a lot of the fun too, is meeting up with
like
the guys.
Camp.
And, oh, yeah.
Exactly. And that's a loss. That's a huge loss part of it. So that's pretty cool. So you guys do a lot of e-scouting, getting out there, looking for sign. So what kind of sign are you looking for? Because essentially you're going, now you've hunted this spot a couple times now over the years, mm-hmm. and now you know it a little bit. But when you're going in basically blind, are you going in the dark? Or are you trying to go in that first afternoon, gather some intel, whether it's scrapes or rubs or tracks? What are you looking for?
Yeah, I like to go in the daylight so you can, you know, kind of get a good layout of things, see what's going on, look for deer trails, you know, if there's food around, if you see bedding, if you see any, you know, pressure from other hunters, you know.
That's the main
tire
thing.
Tire tracks, you know, like, trash in the woods, things like that, tree stands, trail markers, all that stuff, you know, you're looking for stuff like that.
When I'm scouting, especially during the rut, because I'm convinced, you know, during that prime rut period, when the bucks are chasing does, they're focused on nothing but a doe. So what I'm looking for is deer when I'm scouting. I'm just walking and looking for deer.
Mm-hmm.
When I see deer, I set up on it.
Okay.
That's my sign, is just looking for deer.
Yeah, that's
doesn't matter
that's
why
very
they're there,
true.
They're there.
Right. Now, how much pressure do you feel? So, like, if you're walking in smaller patch of woods, right, and you're bumping deer, how much pressure do you feel that they take before you start noticing you're not seeing deer? Yeah. Because they only have so many places they can go.
It all depends.
It depends what's around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if there's a huge chunk of public, or I'm sorry, a huge chunk of private land that they feel safe in, they're going there and they're not leaving.
Yeah.
You got to look at it like, where's the doe living at this time of year? Like, everyone, you got to, like, forget about the buck aspect of it. I mean, yeah, we're all after the buck, but, like, basically hunt it like you're hunting her, because wherever she lives is where he's going to be at that time. Wherever they're living, wherever the does are at, doe bedding, where they're feeding at, what they're doing in the evenings. But like Elliot said, as far as what you said about how much you can get away with,
mm-hmm.
I think if you, like the area, for instance, you killed your buck on, just us looking at that from Onyx and some, you know, pointers we got, tips we heard,
mm-hmm.
we pretty much knew that there was going to be a buck living in there.
Yeah, we had a pretty good feeling about it, yeah. And then when we pursued it and went in there, you know,
Are we telling the story about this now?
We can.
Well, I mean, yeah, let's work into it. Because
it
kind of ties
in. Everything.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about this.
Okay.
This is your biggest buck of all time, right?
Yeah.
Mainframe. Well, we'll talk about it. Yeah.
What time of day was that?
That was middle of the day. You know, probably 1 o'clock.
One o'clock in the afternoon. We hunted. We did a couple one-on-one wind bumps to each other.
Yeah.
On other tracks. And what, we decided we would give that a try, because we heard Adam gave us a tip.
He did, yeah. We, what was that, like an hour and a half away from camp, we drove. Yeah.
Okay.
It was a hike. It was kind of, you know, shot in the dark. We figured, what do we have to lose? So we went after it, checked it out on the map, and when we got there.
So start with just straight e-scouting on this deer.
Absolutely.
And noticed which way the terrain ran and which way the wind was blowing
it. It was very windy that day, so that was a huge factor.
Okay.
Was the wind.
And it was the right direction. And I was like, I think I just mentioned, I was like, dude, I think we can do a one-on-one wind bump in here and we could kill one.
Yeah, we walked in, we parked and walked in downwind
this area. Giant rubs.
But yeah, huge rubs.
I mean,
a lot rubs, of good sign. There wasn't much sign of other people being in there, and there was a ton of deer sign, like Colby said, huge rubs, scrapes, you know, the whole nine. Mm-hmm. Things you want to see when you're hunting.
Yeah, it was cool because I was like, I looked at that, I was like, he's in here. He's in here, you know what I mean? He's laying down in here somewhere.
Yeah.
The wind was howling right in our face.
Screaming.
And this timber kind of ran straight away from us.
Okay.
And I said, either you sit on this side of the pond. There was a small pond.
Yeah, there was a little pond in there. And
on the dam breast, he just had rubs and scrapes. I mean,
it was a thick area. It was, what, just a bunch of, like, cedar trees and...
It was cedars and, like, scrub oaks.
Yeah.
And salted oak trees.
A ton of cover for them.
And we just figured he was in there. Like Elliot said, it was a shot in the dark, and he said, I think... We both kind of talked back and forth where we think he would have wanted to escape to when we do bump him out of his bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were walking around and we stumbled across this pond. And on either side of the pond, you know, there was
big, heavy trails.
There was good trails and good rubs. And it seemed like, I think that was like the southwest side of that pond.
But it led to a bigger chunk of timber.
It did. That was kind of more of an escape route. If a deer needed to get out of there, that was...
And this was
better
a shot
chance
of
an area for that deer to go. So
right.
I was like, I'm going to set up right here.
But
we were in there grunting and rattling.
Yeah, we did a rattling and grunting sequence and nothing.
And then I set up and Colby walked out. He did a big giant loop
flanked
out in the open.
Okay. So as you're flanking around, your scent blowing into that?
Not yet. No, I flanked super wide.
So that it wouldn't...
Like I said, this truck of timber necked down to 30 yards wide.
Wow.
And the deer was bedded 30 yards into the wind bump.
He's at the top of the scroll.
At the very
though.
Top.
Yeah.
Okay.
The very top. And
anyways.
We'll edit that part out.
There was a big terrain change on the south side. Or that would be the south side. It would have been on the south
Yeah, it was the south side.
And it was a giant funnel is what it was. There was an open field on one side and another, a body of water on the other. So I flanked way wide, and the wind was blowing from me to Elliot at the time. I just started zigzagging, letting my scent go. You know, I didn't worry about being quiet, but I wasn't trying to bump deer and blast them out of there.
You weren't hooting and hollering or yelling.
No, I was quiet,
like
just
that.
Basically
like
still
bird,
hunting my
bird
way.
Bird dog was working through something.
Yeah, still hunting my way back to Elliot.
Mm-hmm.
And I got within 10 yards of the deer, and he jumped out of his bed. Boom. Jumped out of his bed.
You saw him at 10 yards?
Oh, yeah. I saw the right side of his rack. He got hung up in some vines, and he went straight to Elliot. And I called him, and by the time my phone even started ringing was when he started raining shots out.
Oh, yeah.
The deer. But when the deer got to him, I was only probably 100 yards from you at that time.
You couldn't have been more than 100 yards. Yeah.
The deer was walking at that point.
He was creeping
through.
Like I
said, I didn't blow the deer out. I just wanted him to get up. That's it. And he wasn't going to run the other way because he had nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
And
so when I saw that deer, he was at 30 yards. He wasn't moving. He wasn't running. He was creeping through. It was, you know, he had just enough to spook him a little bit.
He'd done it before. You can tell he'd done it.
Yeah, he was sneaking his way out of there.
So what's this deer's posture when you say sneaking?
Just sneaking, basically. I don't know
neck
how to
extended, just sneaking through
yeah,
the timber.
Just
you know?
Looking,
just trying to get away from
you. And he's scanning. He was like scanning around, and there, you know, there I am sitting on my knees, hands and knees, there with my rifle, and he's scanning. I was looking kind of behind me, because you know, when you're doing a little wind bump deer drive, a lot of times deer will bust out and they'll just start running pretty fast. So just in case anything, you know, ran down below me, I was turned over my shoulder. By the time I turned around, I saw him there, and he was scanning, creeping through there, and so right on that damn breast of that pond.
And the wind is in your face.
The wind is blowing right in my face.
So the only thing he can rely on is his vision.
Exactly. That was it.
And at this point, I stopped. As soon as I jumped the deer, I stopped.
And so I, you know, you see a deer like that, your heart kind of just stops. You know, when you're on your hands and knees 30 yards away from a mature buck like that, it's life changing. And awesome. So I just slowly pulled up, you know, as I'm pulling my gun up, take my safety off, I get him in my crosshairs and pull the trigger, and he starts running.
Good friend of yours reminded you of something.
Let's just say a good friend of mine, Colby Straw, always says, shoot them till they drop. Well, he dropped and I still kept shooting.
So, I mean, there was no chance that deer was ever going away.
Caliber, I wasn't letting him get away. That deer was laying on the ground dead, and I was running after him, reloading my gun, and still proceeded to shoot.
One more time because he twitched. But at that point, after the first shot, and I heard the bullet smack,
yeah,
I started sprinting right towards Elliot.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was a great experience. That was cool.
That's so cool.
Something I never experienced before.
But it's just little things like that. You kind of get into the groove of things when you're out there. You kind of just start figuring out over time. It just takes time.
Right. Well, I want to rewind a little bit. So, like, the average guy, you tell the story to, they're like, oh, so you guys did a deer drive and killed a big buck. You got lucky. Missouri's full of big bucks. But
no deer
like,
drive.
You got to really stop and peel that back. Like, you got a tip that there was some public ground that was an hour and a half away. So to get in your truck, to drive an hour and a half, it's already, how many days in the hunt are you now?
Oh, that was getting close to running down to the last
couple
of days.
We had what, 2 days left?
Yeah. So you're already beaten
a week and
out.
Over a week and a half.
Oh my gosh, dude. You wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning for 2 weeks straight and hunt dark to
right.
dark. It takes
after
everything
After battling
out
days
of
nothing but rain, days that, you know, 4 degrees, snowing, ice, everything. It takes a toll on you. And that's it. And that's our vacation, you know?
Right.
That's what we look forward to. We spend a whole entire year looking forward to those 2 weeks, and you just get beat up mentally and physically. And
you can't explain that to a non-hunter. When I get home and I'm, like, tired, my wife's like, what do you mean? You've been on vacation. It's like, I think she's starting to understand it, but she'll never understand it.
Vacation would be going back to work at that point.
That's right. So you guys drove, though, an hour and a half, right? Your morale's already beat up, but, like, you actually stopped to make a game plan, how to plan that attack based on the wind, and you flanked way out away so you wouldn't be able to tip this deer.
Right.
And then you got up in his face with the wind, and he let you get within, what, 10 yards?
10 yards. He did not, but he would.
Isn't that amazing?
He held.
And he could smell you. The nose is the most powerful thing he has.
Oh, yeah.
He knew you were there. And then he was like, shit, I got a break.
This deer was better than a 30 yard by 30 yard little briar patch.
Just nasty, thick.
And then when I got to where I jumped him from, like, this was probably before they got into their peak rut. I mean, this deer was not rutted out hard.
Mm-mm.
I don't think.
No, he was.
I think you'll
not
run into deer
all.
That have different attitudes when it comes to certain things.
Right.
I don't think he was much concerned about breeding whatsoever.
Were the deer breeding at this point, or do you think
they were definitely breeding, yeah.
But this deer's neck was not super, super swollen.
He wasn't fighting at all. He had no bruises on him. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't beat up at all. You can tell.
He was just hunkering down and riding it out, I think.
Because he knew there was pressure and it wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
Probably just going out at nighttime for a stroll.
That's it. Oh, definitely. That might have been it.
No, but I think you get more of that than people realize, too.
Oh, go deer out at nighttime attitudes, and, for sure.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, so, that's the thing. It's like... Like you were saying, when we got there, we kind of formed a game plan. Like, a lot of people see that, you know, out in the Midwest, you see a lot of big bucks getting killed. Like, oh, it must be easy. Everyone's killing big bucks. Well, let me tell you, it's not. You know, we still had to execute a plan.
Yeah.
You know, we got beat up for days on end, and we're still coming up with new game plans and trying new things out. And finally, we're able to get something to work. You know, we were at the right place at the right time. We executed a plan. We used our knowledge of playing the wind and knowing the terrain we were in.
And luck plays a giant factor.
And luck was a big thing.
You can be the best hunter in the world, but if you don't have a stitch of luck in your body, you ain't killing nothing.
Yeah.
And that could have very easily been a situation where I saw that deer and didn't shoot him. You know what I mean? It could have
went to the other side,
and I would have never had a shot. You know, it just played out that he came within 30 yards of me, and I pulled the trigger a lot of times on him.
That's awesome, but I mean. I love the quote that the harder you work, the luckier you get.
That's
exactly.
And you can live and die by that quote.
Absolutely.
So,
I say that a lot.
With from the perspective of whitetail theories, though, right? Like, in my mind, I just think it's so crazy. It's like, okay, so Colby, you're 10 yards from this mature buck, mm-hmm. right? He lets you get that close. And then after he runs, he starts sneaking. And he knows he can't smell what's in front of him, so he's relying on his eyes.
He's hardcore sneaking.
And to me, that just that I can picture in my mind's eye the posture of this deer just sneaking with his head down low,
one step at a time, just looking left and right, looking.
I think in the worst way that deer wanted just to loop back and double back
and get back behind
where he was.
Yeah,
I think that's what he wanted to do in the worst way. I think he was going down to that pond and gonna double back and do exactly the same thing.
Okay. So from a whitetail theory perspective, like I feel like so many hunters don't give, especially mature whitetails, enough credit. Like, oh, deer can't see good, and you know, and that they just walk around just aimlessly through the woods. And I want to hear some of your thoughts on just that, and how good do you think their vision is? Do they recognize just a blob in the tree seems a bit off, or are they like, oh shit, That dude's out here trying to kill me. He's trying to take my life, man.
I mean, there's times where I know for a fact I did not move, an old nanny looks right at me.
Oh yeah, they're the worst, man.
When they start blowing at you, there's nothing more you want to do than just shoot them.
I know for a fact I did not move, and they just sense that you're there. I know it.
They're smart. They don't get that big, that old, that mature, whatever you want to call it, by being stupid.
Right. They've.
That's, you know, guys get lucky sometimes, and like we just talked about, luck's a big thing, but
yeah,
there's a reason those deer get to the point that they get in their life, that
for sure,
it's not from being stupid.
Well, I mean we've all been there. I mean, it could be, you know, like you're driving down the road and you're just not paying attention, and that's how accidents happen, mm-hmm. right? Even though you're seasoned driving, you know to look for stuff. Like, I think a buck in the rut, they can just get tunnel vision. They just have one thing on their mind.
Exactly.
Oh, they do.
And it doesn't matter, you know.
I mean, they are drunk, it seems like.
They can be, yeah.
No, they look drunk. It's
unbelievable.
Sometimes.
Yeah, but that deer was, I mean, you guys beat him at his game, and, you know, had you not looped around, like, okay, you ain't getting the whitetail theories right now, right? Had that not played out exactly the way it was, or you guys parked and like, all right, Elliot, you go down here, so you're downwind, and I'm going to go this way, and the two of your scents got in there, you think that deer wouldn't have been like,
gone.
I smelled two different people, and there's one here. Wigging out, you know, and
been gone.
Just stuff that mainstream nobody talks about.
Because if the deer would have broke the other direction,
mm-hmm.
he would have been gone. Because all he had to do was jump across a small field, and he was in another big block of timber.
Right, but he thought it was safe, and he was going to get it back around.
Mm-hmm. Because I flanked wide, and I mean, we did do some grunting.
He didn't know where you came
rattling.
From, yeah. right?
Whether he
well, maybe he maybe he thought there was
other deer there.
He could have thought it was safer from hearing that.
Yeah. So that's pretty interesting. So that's a cool story and a little bit of outside the box way to get it done, you know, because public land, like,
you gotta do what it takes. I mean,
if I try to do a wind bump on one of my leases with the guys, like, they'd be pissed. You know, even if I got a deer, they'd be like, well, that's not how we do it, because you got a certain number of guys on your land and you gotta treat everybody fair.
Yeah.
But public ground, man.
Free range.
It's fair game.
Yeah.
You do what you got
to
do.
But at the same time, you could see, let's just say it was a different store and you guys were coming in for an afternoon hunt and you just saw somebody do the same thing. But if they were sloppy about it, they might not have ever saw that deer at 10 yards, right? If they weren't zigzagging and doing stuff, and you could go in there and still kill a deer. Right. As they said, there's nothing in here, you know.
And then you just got to get aggressive too. Like, we were running out of days. We could have very easily went in there and done a hanging hunt, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. and not been successful.
Right.
Hunted it, you know,
yeah,
3 days.
You're right.
3 days and not seen that deer.
That deer could have just laid there till dark.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and after that experience, that actually changed the way I looked at hanging hunts. You could be within 100 yards of a deer and have no idea that deer's in there.
Every sign of that deer after we gutted it showed that he was laying there all day long. I mean, his piss sack was the size of a full water balloon.
So he wasn't even pissing.
Nope. Wouldn't even get up. Mm. He laid there all day long.
Wow.
All day long.
Yeah.
He knew what he was doing.
Well, that's how I got to become a big mature buck.
I mean, that was probably easily one of the most impressive 8-pointers I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, it was basically a 6-point, if you
basically,
think about it.
Basically,
he had
what?
One inch and a half brow tines.
Barely had brow tines.
Yeah.
And the deer was
143. Good thing he had.
143. Over 140 inches of bone with just
inch and a half brow tines.
Little brows.
Yeah.
That's
it.
He had 14-inch G2s.
Yeah. I mean, that's
he was impressive.
That's very impressive, and I don't think a lot of guys understand that enough too, like scores, you know, because that gets tossed around 140s, 150s, but on that rack, yeah, that's awesome.
And then like, he killed that buck, wind bump. I killed my public land bow buck. I only ever killed one bow buck on public out in Missouri. I killed...
What, you want to talk about it?
I mean, yeah, I mean, because it was completely different.
Let's hear it.
I was hunting, like I said, the points of those ridges.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that every deer...
Are you on a climber or...
I was in a lock-on.
Okay, so you took sticks with you?
Yep. Well, we hung the set.
Let me ask you this real quick. So, like, in Pennsylvania, we have a lot of trees that you can take a climber and just... You can go
buzz right
40
up.
Feet up, right? Yep. So what's the trees out there like? Are they small and like
white branches? Oaks. So they branch. They have branches, you know, okay. Pretty much the whole way up. Those inch and a half to 2 inches.
So you got to use sticks that are like separate, like a lone wolf stick.
Or something like that.
Have fun with a climber on public land.
It's tough. It's tough finding a tree to be able to get a climber.
But it gives you a little more cover.
Yes, it does give you more cover. Like I always leave those branches when I do a hanging hunt. But anyways, it was completely different from Elliot's hunt because like I have this. You know, 350 acre lease. But I've seen big bucks in this area. I know there's big bucks in our lease,
public land.
Bordered public. So I hung a set on the public and I wanted to hunt it. It was me, my dad, and my uncle at the time, and we hung the set on the public and I was going to hunt it the next day. The weather was real warm, but it was probably it was November 12th.
Okay. So you're talking like peak rut, like.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And I think every deer is susceptible to calling at some point in its life, and if not some point of the day, every day. At one point period of the day, whether it be an hour, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, he's susceptible to coming to a call.
Okay.
And I just did a rattling and grunting sequence in the morning at first light and nothing. And I waited, and you know, I tend to wait a half hour, 45 minutes in between rattling sequences, and I did another one and I heard something to my right, and it sounded like a deer grunting. But this was probably 15 minutes after I rattled, you know?
Yeah.
And I look over, and I see this deer, and he's doing exactly like I told you earlier. He's wrapping the tops of these ridges on the downwind side. Like, I set up with the wind in my face, like we all would typically, and he was crosswinding me. He was actually my crosswind up to my right, coming from west. It was a south wind, and he was wrapping the tops of these ridges, and I actually had a decoy out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he saw the decoy and immediately postured from probably 40 yards out, and, you know, stiff-legged his way into 20, quartering toward me, and I put it right between his shoulder blades, and it came out right next to, and it, like, right next to his hind quarter.
Yeah.
And... I think what was different about that was how we were talking about how every deer can be susceptible to calling at some point.
So do you rattle like every 30 minutes in the rut?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Aggressively.
Okay.
Extremely aggressively, yeah.
Do you find there's any negative implications to that? Or?
It can be. Yeah. I think so. I mean, I bumped the biggest deer I've ever seen in my life by rattling or grunting one too many times.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Luckily, I... killed him later on.
Well, that's another story.
That's another story.
We're talking about the public right now. So, you're rattling. Are you using actual deer antlers? Yeah. Do you find that makes a difference?
Oh, absolutely. I think that could be all personal preference. I think that nothing sounds better than real bone.
Yeah.
100%. And you got to paint a picture. It's no different than turkey hunting, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I say the same thing about turkeys. Every turkey has its time to die.
I agree with that. They either want to die or they don't want to die exactly. That day, man.
But
they drive me nuts.
At some point in that day, he's susceptible to being killed.
Right.
It may, like I said, it may be 5 minutes, it may be an hour, but it'll happen.
So I just want to hear a little bit about your rattling tactics. So how aggressive do you, and how long do you usually
Well, you
go?
Want to start out a little bit softer in case any deer are close.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can, you know, maybe you do 10, 15, 20 seconds of soft stuff, but aggressive, but just not super loud.
Okay.
And then you wait maybe 2 minutes, and then you can pick it up a little bit, you know, climb the ladder, as the Drurys would say.
Right.
you don't want to come out swinging and blast your horns together right off the bat. Right. You will blow deer out.
Yeah.
Because if they're in a spot where they can see you and you can't see them and they don't see anything happening, they're going to be freaked out.
Sure.
You want to be quiet. But then you climb, like they say, is just climb the ladder, you know, grunts. Maybe a little bit, just tickle the horns together. Then you want to, you know, snort wheeze maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can really, I mean, just all out, knock out, drag out, brawl. Bang them together. Scratch the trees.
You like to do that?
Oh, my gosh.
Hit the dirt if you're on the ground.
Smack the ground.
Do you do some rattling stuff?
Not a whole lot, but,
yeah.
You know.
I have had great success with it, but some guys just don't like to do it.
I'm one of those. I just feel like I'm giving away my location and... I don't like to use sense. I don't like to do anything. I like to ambush. That's not to say that it's right.
Yeah, no, you know? I'm not a big scent guy, to be honest with you, because I've had deer that blew out because I put, like, you know, estrus out.
Right. I think they know the difference.
And, you know, maybe the
smaller
up,
ones are curious.
Yeah, they are.
The younger ones, but...
But, like, growing up on a deer farm, you know for a fact there's no way to actually bottle legitimate estrus because it's a combination of three things.
Okay.
Secretions, glands, and urine. I mean, it's all the three of those things, and when urine hits the air, it turns to ammonia after 15 minutes anyways.
Right.
So it doesn't matter.
Well, that's why I hear guys, you know, they'll pee in a scrape, and they say it doesn't, urine is urine.
Urine is urine,
yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
And I'm not a scientist or anything, but I always pee in scrapes and put cameras on them and have big bucks come and check them and, you know, work the scrape anyways.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Elliot?
Yeah.
Do you use much sense? You like to pee in scrapes?
Yeah.
That'd be a good t-shirt. We'd make a t-shirt.
Honestly, I used to worry.
That's sweet.
Would you wear that?
I used to worry about that stuff. Like, I'd pee in a bottle in my tree stand and all that. Anymore, I don't care. I'd just pee right off the side of a tree stand.
Yeah.
You know?
Like we said before, though, you're rut hunting, so.
Rut hunting, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right time.
For that.
So you guys hunted Missouri and other parts of the year? Did you say you went for late season?
Yeah.
I've hunted early season before.
This past year, me and Derek Brennan went out late season in lines. That was... quite the experience. I'll probably not do that for
what's
a long
the temperature
time.
What's the temperature like?
Oh, it was
season?
Cold. It was very cold.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to hunt my lease a little bit that I just got this year. Check it out. We had left some crop up. I think it was all beans. So I wanted to see what it was about. And
how'd that work out?
It didn't work out too well. There's some bigger areas, bigger chunks of woods, like, you know, thick timber. And I think that's where the deer are hanging out in the in that part of the season. They weren't where our lease is more of like a
funnel.
It's a travel area. Funnel. You know, they're traveling the rut there. Those are going in there when they're in heat. You know, breeding. It seems
absolutely. I would say the same thing. Just looking at your guys' place,
yeah.
From Onyx.
Oh, I mean, yeah,
it looks like just one giant funnel.
Yeah, I walked the whole lease down. I hardly saw any deer sign in late season there, even with all that. Standing crop.
Sounds like our lease in early season. Me and Anthony hunted four or five weekends in early season and saw two deer.
Yeah.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah, it's such a, like, and that was only a month apart, and you know, we were seeing tons of deer during the rut, and then
oh my gosh,
a month later,
20 deer days,
actually, and... probably, well, yeah, it was about a month later, there was no deer, basically.
It's crazy how they can just migrate. It seems like they're not, whitetails aren't known as, like, a migrating species, but, like, they definitely do, I think.
Yeah. There's something, I mean, well, you talk like big woods hunting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's definitely times that they're this part of
north
the...
north side, south side. You
yeah.
Know?
Yeah. And then they go somewhere else, and then if you walk in and bump them, then...
Gone.
They're gone.
Yeah.
You know?
The woods are so big, they don't have to worry
about
coming
back. That's
a
whole other discussion, I think, is big woods, whitetails would be completely a different discussion.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
We can definitely circle back to that for a future pod. But just to elaborate a little bit more on that, so I do believe that's the one of the biggest challenges, and we kind of touched on this, but on public property, when you have big tracts of private that maybe people don't even hunt, you know, there might be, you might get camera pictures and all kinds of stuff, nighttime activity, but
yeah.
It once there's a little bit of pressure, there's deer, if they can go somewhere else, there's less pressure, unless there's something that keeps them there. Which
maybe food.
For instance, like me and Anthony.
It might be, yeah.
If that's their only food source, they're going to come back there to eat.
Yeah. Me and Anthony are in our lease 2 weeks out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell 100% those deer know when someone gets there.
Is that right?
100%.
Just like, yeah.
Because we've ran cameras from September to November.
Right.
And you have all these pictures, you know?
Yeah.
And all this activity. And you think you're doing everything right with scent and, you know, hunting the wind right. Those deer still know because you still leave ground scent.
Right.
They just know. And the activity does go down, but that's when your rut help is on your side.
Mm-hmm.
Just right place, right time.
I think there is a lot more to ground scent than a lot of people think about.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Like, for instance, one of my favorite spots to hunt on our lease is a creek bottom. Like, 90% of that access is walking through water. And I think that plays a big role.
Oh, because it washes it away.
I just walk in the creek.
Right. Yeah.
Elliot hunted the creek bottom, walked in the water. We talked about you walking in the water.
Yeah, you stay. I would stay in that creek bottom, in that water as long as I could. And
okay.
I'd walk 50 yards to the tree that I wanted to set up in.
I think your access is...
I killed it there. Derek factor. Killed there. You know, we had good
you got
success.
Derek, you got Derek to take care of scent that extreme.
Well,
oh, jeez.
That deer might have been pushed to us from... We did see a lot of
sorry, Derek.
A lot of other the Orange Army was out that day.
Oh man! Oh, this nothing is that the that, Chippendale? Is that the Chippendale Orange season?
Oh, yeah,
that was Chippendale season.
That was Chippendale. Yeah, there's some YouTube videos about that. Serviceide Chippendale. Do a little search, you'll find it.
We had a lot of. That was a lot of fun. That was a good time.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, Colby, what were you saying just to continue with your public experience hunting the tips, hunting lock ones, other than rattling, what other I guess styles and challenges and things have you found that are successful?
I think in Missouri, when you on these public tracks, 9 times out of 10 there's 2 access points.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly they're on the opposite ends. So, I mean, I had the luxury of accessing through my property to get to the public, which others can't.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to where around them, to where they're all entering from this direction with the wind blowing right toward me.
Right.
And I'm hunting already. So they're basically wind bumping to me all morning long.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they realize it or not, whether the deer are going to come directly toward me, but they're in my direction, general direction. That deer was just doing his own thing. Naturally,
right,
that morning it was a weekday, there wasn't many people in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just caught him on
that deer just feels like there's nothing going off. So
I mean,
just
that
doing
deer could
thing.
Have never stepped foot on that public in its life, you mm-hmm. know what I mean,
right,
on that piece of property in its life. It could have just been moving through from another farm a quarter mile down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking for does,
right?
And I just, like we said earlier, right place, right time, and hitting him during that magic time where he's susceptible to calling. And
yeah,
I mean, you kill him.
So you gave a good tip, maybe without realizing you said it, but with the ground scent and how there's access points, and sometimes it's one, sometimes it's two, but a lot of times it's limited, you know.
Set yourself up.
Yeah, but another thing you can do too is sometimes you have landowners that they might not want any hunters. There might be a small piece of land, but you could access through their property.
They might give you permission to trespass. Oh, yeah. Exactly.
You know, and maybe not hunting there, but just to access the public and throw those deer off, because they get so conditioned to, like, what'd
exactly.
you call it?
Michigan
Trail, right?
It was funny we called it that, but
that's you're exactly right, Jim. Like, they get conditioned.
Yeah.
100% the deer have that. If they are living there, they have it figured out.
For sure.
They know what
to do. If you can try something different of how to access them.
I think that's a big important
thing.
How many doors did you and Derek knock on that season?
We knocked on a lot.
I mean, and you did gain some.
Yeah, there was actually a couple guys that would let us access public land through their property. They wouldn't let us hunt there, but
they would
let, you know, and it never hurts to ask. The worst they can say is no.
Right.
Usually someone's not going to come shooting at you.
Not like
if you're there just to ask, you know what I mean? It's most people
are
pretty
nice.
Decent. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So do you guys have any remarks you want to wrap up here in the last couple minutes of the podcast about Missouri? Any recommendations or anything that you would do different?
I think everyone just needs to remember their roots and why we hunt to begin with. I mean, it's not...
Yeah, have fun with it. Always have fun with it, and always learn something every time you're in the woods.
It ain't about killing something, you know? It really isn't about
put your,
we all want
get
to.
Get off the couch, put your boots on the ground, spend some time and learn and remember things that you learn. If you learn something, don't forget it. You know?
It's always, I mean, every time you get in the woods, basically you have to look at it like you are learning something. Every single time. And it's not, we're not there to kill, we're there to learn.
That's a great way to say it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's awesome. Cool, guys. Well, I appreciate you guys coming and
no problem.
Yeah, thanks for having us. This podcast. Was fun. I enjoyed it.
I do believe that there's going to be a future episode talking about hunting the Penns Woods, the big mountain country.
Man, we have some fun in Pennsylvania.
So what hunts do you guys have coming up this year for 2021?
Oh, I leave Wednesday, turkeys. For a big turkey hunt in North Carolina.
Ooh, North Carolina. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously Missouri in the fall.
Yeah, Missouri in the fall and Pennsylvania.
Might do a Colorado trip here.
That's all I really have. You going for elk?
I'm actually going out to fly fish and do some scouting for elk.
That's awesome. Great. Okay. Well, I look forward to getting you guys back here. And that was fun talking some strategies, tactics, and I hope it gave some value to those that were listening. And like they said, just keep it fun. Learn something and don't lose sight that it's not just about the kill. So cool. We'll talk to you guys then.